Welcome to the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell, VSPN. It is October 27th, 2017, and we are going to recap. I'm live. We're going to preview. What week is this? Is this week 8? It is week 8 of the NFL season, almost the halfway point of the NFL campaign. And joining me to do just that is frequent contributor to this podcast, Mike Sando of VSPN. Mike, how are you?
Doing great. Love the late week time. Kind of the haze in the barn. We're ready to go.
Yes. Fortunately, no news breaking in the NFL today. No teams threatening to stop practicing. No players taking personal days. No awful Thursday night game to discuss. Just a relaxing preview to do for week 8. Bunch of interesting matchups this week. I think it's a lot better than the, what would be a nice way to put it, the less than promising slate of a week ago. That certainly did not deliver any good games as well. Let's start with a team that I'm constantly backing, although I gave up on them a few weeks ago, and now that they've won 3 straight games, I might be on my way back to their bandwagon if they can make it 4 straight against the Patriots. That, of course, is the Los Angeles Chargers, who, again, 3-game winning streak, looking impressive, certainly playing well defensively, and now they're facing a Patriots team that just lost Dante Hightower for the remainder of the season with, I believe, a torn pec.
Yeah, I'm very interested in the game as well. I wish it were, in San Diego, but on the West Coast, I think it would be, possibly a fairer fight. I just feel like in New England, I don't care if Hightower's there or not. It's hard to go against the Patriots. Wouldn't you expect them to look at the Chargers, say, hey, look, the one thing we can't have is Bosa and Ingram colliding at our quarterback and knocking them out. So let's run the ball. Is it more complicated than that?
It seems like it should be that straightforward. But you do think about, like you mentioned, Bosa and Ingram, and I mentioned this in SportsCenter last night, you think about teams in the past, in recent years, who have really given the Patriots trouble. It's teams that have two great pass rushers. It's the Chiefs, who, of course, have Justin Houston, and then either Tamba Ali or Dee Ford. The Broncos have had Von Miller and DeMarcus Ware, and now Miller and Shane Ray when he's healthy. The Seahawks, Michael Bennett and Cliff Avril, when they've both been healthy, they've given the Patriots a lot of trouble. And with this Chargers 1-2 duel right now, I mean, they might be the best 1-2 bunch of pass rushers in football, given that you have 16 sacks between Melvin Ingram and Joey Bosa, which is second in the league behind Calais Campbell and Yannick Ngakoue in Jacksonville. So in terms of that pass rush and avoiding it, do you think the Patriots would be able to run the ball effectively against the Chargers if that is their game plan?
Yeah, I think that they do a great job of finding a way to play to whatever game plan they want to have. So, you know, are they going to line up in 22 personnel and just decide we're going to run them? Of course not. They're going to have to throw the ball. They're going to have to find creative ways to get matchups in the running game. But basically, I think if they – you just don't want to fall behind against a team that can rush from the outside like these guys. And of course, you don't want to fall behind anyway, but it's really bad. It really turns those guys loose if you're in that predictable situation. So you just try to keep the game to where you can have some balance. I think New England has done a good job a lot of times for a team that has a great quarterback, a great passing quarterback. They do a pretty good job of running the ball even as they get closer to the goal line. And I think I think we're going to see an emphasis on that. I just can't see how they would do it otherwise unless they want to have a bunch of really quick passes, which teams do all the time too.
Yeah, it does seem like that's a way they could approach it. And I wonder on the flip side of this, I read about the Chargers this week. Ben Volin reported that the Chargers were planning on running the football. That was going to be their philosophy, was going to be, we're going to keep the Patriots off the field. We're going to run the football. We're going to try and have long drives. Do you think that's a viable option for the Chargers?
I think it is until Tom Brady's got 2 touchdowns and you're down 17-3. I think that's always a great plan to have, but it assumes you can control the game or that you can be the Chicago Bears and magically score on defense. You know, I don't doubt that that's what they want to do. I just think that it's hard to do that against New England on the road when New England probably will find a way to score points.
Mm-hmm. And it does seem like, just watching Melvin Ingram this year, it doesn't seem like he's the same guy he was a year ago. He looks a lot more like the player, to be honest, who had those knee issues in 2015. He's averaging 3.4 yards per carry, no run longer than 21 yards this year. He's been an effective receiver in short yardage. He has 4 receiving touchdowns to go with his 3 rushing touchdowns on just 29 catches. But It does seem like he doesn't have that kind of burst. He does have a foot injury that's hurting him a bit in practice, and the offensive line is definitely struggling. Matt Slauson just went out for the year. Of course, they lost Forrest Lamp for the season, who's going to be a rookie starter for them. So I just don't know if they have the quality of running game to really, you know, dominate the Patriots on the ground.
I think deep down they knew they were basically the same team they were last year, trying to not get too injured and just with a little bit of a different coaching staff. And so I don't think they're suddenly going to be a dominant run team. I think it's going to go through Rivers for better or worse. And, you know, I know they're on this hot streak of winning games right now, but when you actually look at their games, other than shutting out Denver, which is great if you can have a shutout, but they're sort of the same sorts of games, right? I mean, you're 19-17 or 22-20 or 23-19, and you win some of them and you lose some of them. I don't know that there's a huge turn to is there a huge turn to how they're winning the games that is going to suddenly be sustainable from here on out, or is it just sort of this is the way that it happens sometimes?
It does seem like it's pretty much just blind luck where it's, you know, they probably deserve to win one of those first two games against Denver and Miami, given how close they were, and they lost both of them, and they probably deserve to lose one of those games between the Giants and the Raiders, and they ended up winning both of those. So they are, to some extent, balancing out.
What I kind of like about the game, Bill, is the fact that you have a Gus Bradley defense for the Chargers, and when you there's been some real big game matchups between like the Dan Quinn Atlanta defense and both the Quinn the Bradley and the Chris Richard Seattle defense, where those defenses have had their way at times against New England, and really what those defenses do is they concede that short completion and then just try to pound the heck out of you, you know. And so I'll be really interested to see, you know, we don't have that many games of Gus Bradley with the Chargers, but I'm interested to see how well they do in sort of rallying to those and making it hard for New England to get yards after the catch.
Yeah, it does seem like that's going to be their philosophy, certainly. I don't know if they have the cornerbacks to do that. The Patriots, you know, it seems like their cornerback depth is getting better in terms of Johnson Bademosi's playing better than anyone could have expected. You know, even though they're down Eric Rowe, they might get Stephon Gilmore back, which seems like it would help. But it does seem like the Chargers may not have the depth of cornerback to hold up in that cover three. Like the Patriots will be able to attack, you know, Trevor Williams, for example, playing on one side of the field across from Casey Hayward. What do you think about the Patriots defense? Obviously, the numbers are better over the last few weeks, but do you think they're actually improved as a unit?
Yeah, I do. I think that they would probably feel as though the first month of the season is kind of preseason in the NFL, and that I think Belichick even came out and basically said that it's ridiculous to expect teams to be as good as they were late in the season before, early in the year, if you were a good team that had it rolling. And I think we're seeing, you know, we knew with New England that they were working in a lot of new pieces. They had really brought in a bunch of veterans, and how well was it going to all fit together? And I think it hasn't always fit together well, but I do expect that to improve over the course of the season. They've always been that type of team. I think we know they're a really well-coached team. They have decent continuity in coaching, and I do think they're improved and will probably continue to improve. And at the end of the year in the AFC, it's going to be the teams we thought.
Yeah, it does seem like that's going to be where it ends up. But yeah, I do think they're better. I don't know if they're as good as the numbers might suggest, but I do think they've, you know, kind of eliminated a lot of those big mistakes where they're allowing huge chunk plays. But we'll see. Phillip Rivers, you never know what you're going to get from week to week with Phillip Rivers. So going to be a really interesting game. Even if the Chargers don't win, if that pass rush gets going, you figure they might be a little more competitive than the broad record might indicate.
Yeah, and I was going to say, too, you know, we're talking about New England short passing game against the Chargers, that, you know, it's fair to point out that Brady leads the league in deep passes this year. You know, passes of 20 or more yards, he's got 38 attempts. That's most in the league. It takes time, usually, to develop those. Maybe some of them are off of play action in ways that create time for your quarterback. But, you know, you're mentioning the Chargers corners where, you know, we got to mention that Brady has gone down the field a lot this year. That's a big component of their game. Can they do that against a team that looks like it rushes the passer well?
Yeah. Look at the numbers this year by DVOA. The Chargers are actually the third best defense in the league so far this season on deep throws. So we'll see if they can attack Brady that way. The Patriots, on the other hand, speaking of DVOA, 26th in the league against short passes. So if the Chargers do want to throw those short passes, which they seem to throw constantly, those shallow cross routes, the slants, if they get Phillip Rivers going there, it could be a way for them to move the ball. So an interesting game. I'm really excited to see what happens. Speaking of interesting, a team that happens to be winning games in bizarre and even Tebowian ways, some might say, the Chicago Bears, who are making magic happen in addition to playing good defense and running the ball effectively and winning games over the past couple weeks with Mitchell Trubisky as quarterback. What are your early takes, early returns on Trubisky after watching him play for 3 weeks now?
You know, I guess I would have hoped that there would be a little bit more enterprise on the offensive side, and I bet you Dow Loggins does too, but the reality is they don't have any receivers, and they've got John Fox as their head coach. So I don't think there's anything that's happened over the last few weeks that has, you know, changed the kind of mostly positive excitement that a lot of people had and I had for him after seeing him in the preseason and you know, flashes here or there. But it just feels to me like, you know, they realize how limited they are, and so they're really pulling it close to their vest, and we're not going to – this is going to be – this is going to be – they're basically going to try to do what the Eagles did this year, a more extreme version where the Eagles get a couple of weapons for their second-year guy and then take the wraps off a little more. And I think we'll see whether John Fox is there. We don't know, but I think next year they're clearly going to have to really address the receiver position, and then I think we'll have a better feel. How do you – how do you get an opinion on a quarterback when he throws the ball 7 times in a game?
Yeah, he only has 48 passes through 3 weeks. But let me ask you this, though. If you think this is a receiver-driven decision and not a quarterback-driven decision, well, I mean, they had Mike Glennon throwing 35 times a game over the first 4 weeks of the year with the same receivers who were bad then, too. I mean, I hope that they didn't need the first 4 weeks of the year to realize that they had terrible receivers, because they sure do. They've had them all year. But now with Trubisky, he's averaging 16 passes per game. They have, you know, he makes a nice throw or two per game. He certainly has the athletic ability, and we see it in little flashes here and there, but it does seem like they pretty much want to get him rolling out. They want to get him on the edge. They want to get him, you know, it's simple throws to make. And otherwise, they're going to run the ball and then apparently unleash the most unholy return offense in the history of the league to create takeaways and big plays.
I think you can probably envision some really interesting philosophical discussions inside that building throughout the year, right? Where how aggressive should we be? How conservative should we be? How much should it be on the run game? And so you go in the start of the year and you got Glennon and you try to do a little more and it doesn't work at all. And you lose whatever huge blowout loss to Tampa Bay. You're going to have to bench Glennon. You're turning it over all the time. And so then the discussion is, hey, look, not only are we changing Glennon, but we're not losing that way. Sorry, I'm not putting the kid in that position to where we're going to be talking about, do we have to go back to Glennon in 4 weeks? So I think that's, those are the types of dynamics that create with a defensive-minded head coach who's been in a lot of these games where the quarterback didn't throw the ball a lot. I think that's how you get here more than anybody saying, hey, look, we missed on Trubisky. He's not good. He's not ready. Let's be extra careful. I think it's, you know, more the former.
That makes sense. I think that's really logical. It is, however, an extreme example of that model where, I guess, to be fair, we haven't really seen them trail by a significant amount, so we haven't really seen a situation where Trubisky's needed to throw for them to catch up. You know, they've been close games the last 3 weeks, so he has been able to kind of, you know, pick and choose where they're going to have him throw the football. But we'll see. I mean, this is going to be a tough matchup for the Bears, because not only is it, of course, the Saints and Drew Brees on that offense playing at home, but this is a defense that may be more shocking than Mitchell Trubisky winning games while throwing completing 5 passes. This Saints defense looks good over the last month of the year.
Phil, that's the number one thing I'm most excited for in this game is with such a one-dimensional attack for the Bears, I just want to see, hey, are you good on defense, Saints? Have you turned a corner? Or is this just really a situation a lot of weeks of who you play? Hey, you get lucky, you get the Rodgers-less Packers, you know? Let's see it. We need to see it more over time. it's so fascinating in the NFC because it's open, and the Saints' viability correlates completely with their defense. I was doing this morning and getting ready to come on this podcast, and if you take the Saints since Breeze has been there, mm-hmm. and you correlate their points per game or offensive EPA or points allowed or defensive EPA, you correlate any of those things with their one loss record. Mm-hmm. When you do the offensive side of the ball, it's like a 50% correlation. You do the defensive mm-hmm. side of the ball, it's 80%.
Yeah.
And, you know, for listeners who may not want to be into statistical correlations and aren't going to bring that up, I understand. Just take it to points per game.
Yeah.
When they've allowed under 22 points per game in a season, they're 58-22 with a Super Bowl win. Mm-hmm. The other seasons, they've allowed 24-plus. They've gone 7-9 five times, 8-8 once. So right now, they're allowing 22.2 a game. It's right between those two. It's straddling the fence. And I want to see which way they go starting in this game. If they can hold down the Bears and this is who they are, and the rest of the season they're not allowing that many points per game, they're going to be there in the end. They're going to have a good chance. They're going to be a playoff team. They always have been when the defense is decent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you look at the numbers, and I think the one I found was if they finished in the bottom quarter of the league in DVOA on defense, that's happened, I think, every year except for four in Drew Brees' tenure with this team, and those other years, those 4 years where they weren't a bottom eight defense, the Saints won an average of more than 11 games, made it to the playoffs each time, and then, like you mentioned, won that Super Bowl. So, obviously, they don't need to be great. They just have to be okay. I will say, though, about this specific matchup, the thing that might concern you if you're a Saints fan, and you're looking at how they've performed on defense, well, they're very good against the pass, sixth in DVOA against the pass. They're 29th still in DVOA against the run. Even last week, the Packers, who really didn't have a very functional passing attack, ran for 181 yards on the Saints. So, you know, you could see a game where even if Trubisky doesn't play better, you could see the Bears running the ball effectively.
I think the Bears can't wait to play this game and can't wait to be physical and see how the Saints hold up. It's a great test. It's such an extreme team that the Bears are. But they play physical and beat people up. And so, if, you know, can the Saints roll with that? Now, one thing about New Orleans is I think they do try to, you know, have a running threat. I think their running game's been pretty good. They do a lot of stuff. Traditionally, they've done stuff out of a little bit heavier formations, trying to create make people respect the run so that they can go down the field with the pass. I think it's a really interesting matchup. Even though the Bears are prehistoric offensively, it does present some challenges to the Saints that I think we want to see how they do against those challenges.
Yeah, I definitely see that. And I think in terms of the Bears' defense, we're almost sort of, at least I'm at least sort of discounting what they've done just because it's been so dramatic in terms of the results. I mean, this is a team that has three return touchdowns in the last two games after having, I believe, a total of two return touchdowns in the two-plus seasons previously under John Fox. And that's in addition to, of course, the Tariq Cohen halfback pass for a touchdown, in addition to the punt, a fake punt for a touchdown. I mean, they've been creating offense in different ways, but the defense, I think we're sort of selling them short given how well they're playing over the last few weeks. Granted, Sam Bradford wasn't 100%, but they knocked him out of the game, allowed 20 points to the Vikings. And that was with, you know, kind of pretty useless offense. Last 2 weeks against the Ravens and Panthers, they haven't allowed a touchdown, just three field goals against Baltimore and that lone field goal against the Panthers on Sunday. So even if they're not going to be getting a return touchdown a week, they're still playing a lot better than they have at any point under John Fox.
Yeah, I think, you know, we can just look at, okay, they've played Matt Ryan, they've played Ben Roethlisberger, and they've played, Jameis Winston, or probably, I guess, Cam Newton, too. I mean, they played some name quarterbacks, and I think for the most part have acquitted themselves well. And you can look and say, well, Falcons aren't the same this year. Hey, Roethlisberger was, you know, struggling early in the year, or Cam's just inconsistent. Those things are all true, but they didn't get shredded by those guys, so that's good.
Yeah. It does look like that's not the case. I mean, in terms of the two games we discussed, the Patriots are 7-point favorites at home against the Chargers. The Saints are 9-point favorites at home against the Bears. But if I was asking you who is more likely to win their game outright, it sounds like you would pick the Bears over the Chargers.
I think I would, because I still need to see, you know, more from the Saints. I think we sort of know what the Patriots probably are at home. I don't feel great about either of the visiting teams. Like, would I want to have a lot of money on the games? No, but, you know, the Chargers have a better chance to outscore New England just because, you know, hey, New England's, you know, been in some shootout type games against the Panthers and lost. So I guess you could find a formula for, the Chargers formula is more known. I mean, we know that Philip Rivers can get hot and could win the game, but, I don't know. I don't feel great about either one of those. I don't feel great about either one of those teams going in necessarily and winning.
I'm certainly not going to ask you to put any money down, but I'm just intrigued because it seems like they're in kind of similar places, and I do agree with you. I do think the Bears are more likely, even though they're not likely to win, I think they are in a way just because they do have that running game that matches up well with the Saints, and they do have that very solid defense. It does seem like, you know, they have a shot of keeping it close, whereas with the Patriots and Chargers, anything could happen. The Chargers could show up and win by 10 points, and they could lose by 40, and either of them seem possible to me on any given week. We're going to get to a break. We're going to come back with more Bill Barnwell Show here in a moment. But first, guys, let me tell you about our partners today. Huge friends of the show, people and a company we've grown to adore here at the Bill Barnwell Show, and that's SeatGeek. If you don't know about SeatGeek, I'm not sure what's wrong with you. You may want to get back on the internet a little more frequently, but SeatGeek does an incredible job of aggregating tickets from all over the web, then using their deal score technology to rate the tickets. So you don't have to worry about paying too much for tickets to the Browns-Vikings game this weekend. You don't have to worry about paying too much for any Browns game going forward. You can pay $10 per ticket and get to that Jags-Browns game on November 19th. You want to spend New Year's Eve traveling to Pittsburgh to check out the Browns and the Steelers in Week 17? You can do that too. $77 minimum price to get in at SeatGeek. You may have to pay for that hotel. You may have to talk to your family about what you're doing with your life when you're spending New Year's Eve following the Browns around America, but good news is you will get a good price on tickets because SeatGeek promises that to you. The most reliable ticket source on the web. And even better, if you use my promo code today, you don't have to pay $77 for that ticket on New Year's Eve. You have to pay $57 because SeatGeek will send you $20 after you make your first purchase on the SeatGeek app. And to do that, just go to the SeatGeek app, go to the promo code section, and enter in my promo code, which is Barnwell, B-A-R-N-W-E-L-L. Enter that in, make your first purchase, you will get $20 back on your first purchase. So again, you want to get $20 back on your first ticket for any game, not just the Browns, fortunately, but a game you might actually want to attend. Download the SeatGeek app, enter in promo code Barnwell, get $20 back on your first SeatGeek purchase today. All right, back here on the Bill Barnwell Show, joined by Mike Sando of ESPN. We are previewing Week 8 of the NFL season. We covered Bears Saints and Patriots Chargers before the break. Now let's get to two other games. And an interesting situation happening currently in the league that I want to get your insight into. It's the Martavis Bryant situation. So let's get to Steelers-Lions. And, I mean, is Martavis Bryant getting the worst advice imaginable? Is he just on an island here? What do you think is happening and what is going to happen with Martavis Bryant and the Pittsburgh Steelers?
I think Mike Tomlin got the best gift ever because you got a guy you don't need who you can set an example to your team. I mean, this is not like they're setting down Ben Roethlisberger, right? I mean, Martavis Bryant's a nice guy to have when he's rolling, but he hasn't done anything. He hasn't been reliable. So they get to say, hey, look, you don't want to be doing things our way. Then, you know, we'll sit you for the game. And I think those types of things resonate with the team. They set a tone with your team. They give you credibility, as a coach when you're willing to set a guy down. But at the same time, what's the cost? So how does this end? He has no value, really, if he's a problem not producing. I mean, I think they could just kind of control him. And I don't think anyone's going to offer a huge price for him. They could take it, trade him if somebody makes an offer and they just don't want to deal with it. But they could also just write it out and make an example of him.
It does seem like it wouldn't really be logical to trade him. I mean, they made a deal in the past where it was the Santonio Holmes trade with the Jets where there had been some off-field rumblings leading to that trade for a very late pick in the draft. I think a sixth rounder, maybe, if I'm not mistaken. But I mean, this is a guy who it seems like he's basically publicly on Instagram, as public as it gets, you know, requesting a trade and then denying it and going back and forth. And it's not like he's playing well. He obviously has multiple suspensions in his past. You'd have to be really desperate if you're a team in need of a wide receiver and have a very stable locker room and basically be willing to take on the risk of adding Bryant. There's not a salary risk, but just in terms of him upsetting the balance of your team by not getting the ball enough. I mean, is there any team in the league who, even for a seventh-round pick, you think it would make sense for?
Makes sense, no. But, I mean, you know, the Bears obviously need one, but is that what you want to bring in? You got a rookie quarterback, and you're trying to, you know, have your program on a certain level, and you're going to bring that in? And, you know, to me, no. I wouldn't want to mess with it. I don't think the upside is good enough when you have a guy who you're not going to sign him long-term to a nice deal because he's another misstep away from being banned even more.
Mm-hmm. I don't see John Fox making that decision.
No. No, I don't either. So it would take real desperation or a place where everything's really, you know, really, really solid and strong, you know. It's solid
doesn't
and strong in Pittsburgh and not working.
Yeah, exactly. In terms of the rest of the team, though, is it fair to say the Steelers might be the most complete team in football right now?
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. Yeah, and I think it's funny that we're saying it within 2 weeks or 3 weeks of people wondering if, you know, it's all going to come crashing down and is Roethlisberger done. You know, I think the cream does usually rise to the top, and I don't feel like they have necessarily a fatal flaw. Do you see fatal flaw with them?
Not especially. I mean, you know, of course, there's always that, hey, if Ben Roethlisberger throws five picks in a game, they're going to look bad. Or if, you know, Le'Veon Bell gets hurt, that offense suddenly changes in terms of what they can do with the running game. And, yeah, I mean, that's fair. But I don't think that's any different from, the half dozen other teams at the top of the league. If Kareem Hunt gets hurt, the Chiefs are in trouble. You know, you saw with David Johnson, that offense was totally different once he went down with an injury. So I don't think they're materially different in terms of, you know, having a fatal. I think they, when everyone is healthy, they are the most complete team in football. And so far this year, they've been very healthy. I think they're probably the healthiest contender. And they're also, there's only one team in football in the top 10 in offensive and defensive DVOA, and it's the Steelers. And not just that, they're in the top five for both offensive and defensive DVOA. So, I mean, they're, you know, the special teams, maybe not great. I think they're middle of the pack in special teams. And of course, there are the injury concerns, but it does seem like there's, you know, just a lot to like about this team right now.
Yeah, and I think they can beat you more than one way. You know, I think you could envision a scenario where they have to throw to win and they could do it, or they could be a running team and do it, or they could be a combination of those things and do it. I just think they are set up pretty well as the team that we probably have the least questions about.
Mm-hmm. Is there something you need to see from them over the final 8 weeks or 9 weeks of the year? Because you look at their situation, they're already in such great shape to win their division and make the playoffs. They are number one in the league, according to the Football Power Index, in terms of their chances of making the playoffs, which is 97.3%, and their chances of winning the division, which is 94.8%. So is it just about staying healthy for them over the rest of the season? Is there something specifically you want to see them improve on or do well or just kind of exhibit that they can do?
Yep, I would like to see consistency from them. I would like to see them perform, you know, consistently better on the. Although they actually have done well on the road this year, they've done really well on the road, except for the Bear game. That was one thing I know going into the year. If you looked at Roethlisberger home and away, you know, there was a huge gulf in some of the recent seasons. But I want to see consistency and not a ton of drama down the stretch. You know, I want to. You know, right now, I think the correct narrative is that this was a team that had some question marks and issues to work through early, and now things have calmed down a little bit and they're ready to roll. Okay, I just want to see it now. You know, I want to see them be that team that rolls, and I think there's a great chance of it. If you look ahead to their schedule, they're going to get Green Bay without Rodgers. You know, they're when they play New England, this is at home. I think the season sets up pretty well for them.
Yeah, I mean, five of their eight games after the bye are at home. Their three road games are the Colts, the Bengals, and the Houston Texans on Christmas afternoon. So it is a pretty easy slate in terms of their schedule. So it's not crazy to think that if they make it to the bye at 6-2, you know, they could finish. They could go 7-1 and make it to 13-3 at the end of the year and have a one seed locked up before they have to head to Cleveland, or sorry, host Cleveland in week 17. On the flip side of this game, I still don't really know what to make of the Lions. I do feel like they needed a bye week, given how badly Matthew Stafford was banged up. But this defense is the hard part for me because they've been so incredibly turnover dependent. They've created a ton of turnovers, I believe more already this season than they had a year ago. 14 this year, number one in the league. And last year, I think they had 12. Well, they had 14 a year ago. So they've equaled their total from last year through six games. And when they're not creating turnovers, the defense doesn't look very good. So I guess I wonder, is it going to be a thing where they're going to have to force 2-3 turnovers a week to be good, or can they hold up just, you know, playing coverage when they're not getting those breaks hopping their way?
I agree with you. And now, you know, Haloti-Ngata is not going to be there for them. I think he was a good veteran sort of stabilizing force, plus being a tough guy to move around a lot. So they feel like a team to me that I question their staying power a little bit. You know, Matthew Stafford, we saw last year, got banged up late in the year and it affected him. He's a little bit banged up now. Maybe the bye week helps him, but I feel like they're not a team that has that great reliable run game. And I think that can take a toll, you know, on a quarterback over the course of the year. They've been playing without their left tackle, you know, now Golden Tate's banged up. I agree. Then you take the thing on defense where it's been turnover reliant. I just wonder how many of the fundamentals there are going to be reliable over the course of the whole season and are going to be in position to elevate them to be really any different than they were last year when, you know, they did make the playoffs, but you never really felt in the playoffs that they were going to go far. And so that's my sort of fear for them, is that they're on this plateau and don't quite have the combination of things needed to take it further.
Yeah, it does seem tough. I mean, this is still a team that, you know, they beat the Vikings in a close game at Minnesota, which is a pretty impressive victory given how good the Vikings are this year. They gave the Panthers a bit of trouble before coming up short in the end, where they launched a comeback and got it to 27-24. Of course, they could have beat the Falcons in that game in week three. They came within a half yard of winning that game. And I don't know what to make of the Saints game. I just have to ignore that in my head because it just so many weird things happen in that game that I can't make heads or tails of it. So I'll be intrigued to see them. And this is going to be their toughest matchup of the season so far. It's going to be at home. You know, if they win this game, they're at 4-3. They get to play the Packers without Brett Hundley at quarterback next week. And then the Browns after that. So, you know, could be a thing where if they get hot, they win those three games. Suddenly they're 6-3. They're in great shape to make the playoffs. But if they lose the Steelers game, then even if they beat the Packers and Browns in the next 2 weeks, they're going to be 5-4 heading into a tough stretch of divisional games. So I think this is, we're going to learn a lot about the Lions in this game. Even if they don't win, I think we're going to get a good sense of where they are currently at this point of their tenure this season.
Yep. They have felt to me like a team last year and this year that, you know, the saying about the sum and greater than the parts and all that, you know what I mean? Where you're getting better results than you should be. Last year it was Matt Stafford with the eight comeback victories or fourth quarter wins or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, tremendous reflection on him. He's the type of quarterback who can do that, but that's hard to bank on. I think they are a team that plays really hard, that's done a good job in their scheming and development of Matt Stafford to eliminate some of the negative plays. You know, they haven't been a team that just blows the game. I think when you play hard, you hang around in games, you have a good culture now, and you have a quarterback that can pull some rabbits out of hats occasionally. Mm-hmm. You know, they're just sort of a team that's always there and got a chance. Even when they're down big to the Saints, you know, they came back. I mean, they almost, if a couple more things could have fallen their way, you know, they were down big on Carolina. They made it a game. They're just sort of a tough out, and you just wonder if they have. Are there too many outs for them to? I get the feeling like if the season were like 30 games long, we'd have a better. You know, they would be well under 500, but over the course of 16, they may be able to just sort of be there.
Yeah, I mean, it's not out of the question given what they can do. It never feels like they're out of games. Even if they're down multiple scores in the fourth quarter, it just feels like they always seem to get those drives where they get, a touchdown, and then they get the ball back and score again, and suddenly it's a one-score game with a couple minutes left. Who do you have in this game? FPI says the Steelers are slight favorites, 51.7%. They should be 0.6 of a point. Vegas has it as a three-point game. Do you think Steelers pull this one out, or are the Lions going to pull the home upset?
I think the Steelers probably do win the game. I think they're the better team. I think they seem to be, playing better. And we do have some questions about just the matchup. I think it's a tough – I think that the talent is on the Steelers' side in the game, and that should carry the day.
I tend to agree. I do think the Lions are an interesting team. I think we can get a lot of different perspectives on them this week, but I do think the Steelers are just, like I said, the most complete team in football right now. And outside of that one awful game on offense against the Jags, I do think they're in good shape to be maybe the best team in football for the second half of the season. Let's finish up. Let's talk about the Broncos and Chiefs, a team that with Denver, they started 3-1 and looked to be in great shape. Trevor Siemian was playing the best football of his career. The defense, which has been supposedly about to regress for years, is holding up. Seems silly to suggest that. And then over the last couple of weeks, things have gone poorly for them. They lost to the Giants in a very ugly performance on Sunday Night Football. Last week, they get shut out by the Chargers, and suddenly they're 3-3. They're heading to play, I would say, arguably might not even be necessary. Over the next 3 weeks, they are at Kansas City, at Philadelphia, the two best teams in football. The week after, they are hosting the Patriots, who might be the third best team in football. So could go south very quickly for them over the next 3 weeks. Not crazy to imagine them going 3-6 over the next over the first start to their season. And at that point, who knows what happens? They could bench Trevor Siemian. They could, of course, totally change their construction. Very interesting spot for them. So when it comes to the Broncos, do you believe more in the team that started 3-1 or the team that has the ugly couple losses over the past 2 weeks?
I think the answer is in between, but I think the problems exposed recently are real and could doom their season. I agree that they could be a 3-6 type team coming out of this. They really needed to win, the Giant game. And it was impressive that they did, win the Dallas game earlier in the year when people thought Dallas was maybe better than they are. But the offensive line, Siemian is clearly a middle-of-the-pack average quarterback, clearly.
Sure.
So the formula to winning with that is play good defense and have a good enough running game to not ask him to do too much. And I feel like they're running game and protection is why he looked so bad over the second half of last year. And it may have been a little better early in the year, but what's happening to them at right tackle right now, if Justin Houston doesn't have a big game, I would be surprised in this matchup. And so, you can put some of it on the offensive line, but Siemian as a young quarterback is not protecting himself or the football. And he's risking the ball when pressure arrives, and he's risking his body. Sometimes he's diving forward, and it's gritty, and he's laying out on a pick six return. But he has to – they'd be better taking a knee on offense than having him risk the ball. You can't do it. And we saw that when they – in their Super Bowl season. Remember when Peyton Manning had all those interceptions early? They were not going to win having that formula. They just had to – eat the football and not turn it over to have a chance. And I think they could be in more of these games if they do that, but Siemian has been giving it away a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he's definitely been a problem, but do you think that they're better off going to Brock Osweiler or when he's healthy, Paxton Lynch?
No, I don't. I think that their quarterback situation is not good. I thought that was the limiter going into the season. I thought they were a 500 team. And, now and they probably still can be, that type of team. I think their defense is good enough. And, this is going to make it look worse than they are these next few games that they have. But they're just interesting to me because Elway obviously thinks that, they should be contending. And that's why he keeps changing the coaches. And and yet, at the end of the day, are they? I mean, is their quarterback and offensive line good enough to be that?
And that was supposed to be the thing this year. It was the offensive line was supposed to improve. That was going to make Trevor Siemian's life easier. And then the offense was going to be solved. And, you know, I don't think Garrett Bowles has been terrible by any means. That right tackle has been more of an issue because of injuries. And they've had to rely a little too much on players like Donald Stevenson for stretches who just aren't up to the challenge when it comes to being an NFL lineman. But also speaks to their evaluations in terms of offensive linemen, where they keep spending on offensive linemen. And, you know, men like Watson just isn't really all that good. Donald Stevenson's just showing all that good, and they're spending millions of dollars to acquire those guys in free agency. This is also a team that has been the third worst, I should say, red zone offense this season, and part of that has been because Brandon McManus has been struggling. And so I don't understand why the Broncos ever spend money on a kicker, just because it's so easy to find kickers who can kick well in Denver because it helps you so much as a kicker. But, yeah. I mean, he's been 8 of 13 this year. He's been awful.
You know, the Broncos right now are reeling offensively. They don't have the personnel in their offensive line. They have a young quarterback who hasn't played very many games and is now beat up. And they have a staff that's barely been together. So it's really hard to find solutions under those circumstances. And, you know, in contrast, they're going to play a Chiefs team where Andy Reid and Brad Childress will be coaching their 200th game together in the NFL, not counting the time they spent together in the 80s at Northern Arizona University. You've got Matt Nagy and Andy Reid who have been together 160 games over two franchises. Bob Sutton and Reid, 75 games. Okay, there's a lot to draw on. You have a quarterback in Alex Smith who's seen everything. And so this is a real cohesive Kansas City unit that when they stumble, hey, no one panics. You've been together. We've done this before. We've done it before 10 times. We'll be fine. We can ride this out. In Denver, this staff, if you look at Vance Joseph and some of his assistant coaches, they've been together for 6 games. They have a quarterback who's hardly played, who is trying to adapt to a little bit of a different system. They don't have an offensive line that they've tried to spend the last 5 years building together with the same staff. So I think it's very difficult for Denver to put all that together and win this game in Kansas City unless, you know, their defense just plays lights out and forces turnovers, which could always happen.
Well, it's funny you should bring that up because I'm a little concerned about the defense no longer forcing turnovers. This is a unit that last year had 27 takeaways in 16 games. This year, in 6 games, they have 4 takeaways. And after Von Miller, they just haven't had anybody else step up in terms of the pass rush. Von Miller has 7 sacks and 12 knockdowns. Nobody else has more than 2 sacks, more than 4 knockdowns. So they're not getting to the quarterback very frequently, and then they haven't forced a single fumble on defense all season. So they're just not creating a lot of possibilities to really, really create takeaways and big plays for that defense.
Yep, and I was in Denver a couple weeks ago and talking to them about, you know, the defense, which was playing great at the time, but they were obviously looking for that additional pass rusher, whether it's Shane Ray or somebody, to emerge in the absence of DeMarcus Ware. Hasn't really happened. And then what's really interesting, Bill, in this game against the Chiefs is the Chiefs don't care about your pass rushers, right? Because they're going to run all of these tricky plays where you don't even block Von Miller half the time. You just put him in conflict and you tuck the ball in the back's belly, and you read Von Miller, and if he crashes inside, you go outside. If he stays outside, you go inside. And so there will be a number of snaps during this game where Von Miller doesn't even have a chance to rush the passer through just the way they're going to play in Kansas City. That makes it hard to get sacks and turnovers as well.
Mm-hmm. And we've heard about Andy Reid, of course, and his incredible record after bye weeks, and this is a mini bye. I mean, they played on Thursday last week. Obviously, a very tough loss to the Raiders, came down to the final play on 4 or 5 different times, and then they've had 11 days off. They're playing on Monday night this week, so they even get an extra day when it comes to preparing for the Broncos. So it does feel like, in a lot of ways, they're going to be well-positioned to possibly challenge and take on the Broncos. And the Chiefs, of all teams who are likely to give away a bunch of footballs, they don't have a single turnover since the first play of the season against the Patriots in that Kareem Hunt fumble. So, the Broncos are going
to end
turnovers.
No, that's just, I know, you could really, it's funny, if you had just started, if you wiped out anything you ever knew about football before this season, and just could only analyze this season, I mean, what would you think? Alex Smith doesn't have an interception. I mean, I just don't. What's Alex Smith going to have at the end of the year? 7 picks? Doesn't he have to? I mean, I don't understand how they have no turnovers ever.
Would you put Smith ahead of Carson Wentz in the MVP race right now?
That's a great question, because now I have to wipe out all of the things I've thought about Alex Smith forever in the past and everything I think that Carson Wentz can be. Because those two things where you see one guy's ceiling, you would say, I'll lose my quarterback evaluation card if I go with Alex Smith. But how do you sort of not right now lean towards what Alex Smith's been able to do? Now they've lost a couple in a row, but he's played lights out. I think you have to go with him, right now, and on a team that, look, we take into account he's been with Andy Reid for a long time. They've got a great thing going. They do things to not really have it be on his shoulders as much as you'd think, but he's made huge plays down the field, huge plays with his legs to win games. I think I'm not arguing against Alex Smith right now.
Interesting. I know he said all these things about the Broncos and what rough shape they're in and how stressful their situation is over the next couple of weeks. But let's say they win this game against the Chiefs, which is not out of the question, of course. Their Broncos defense is still pretty good. They're 4-3. The Chiefs are 5-3. The Broncos have the tiebreaker over the Chiefs. They're in great shape to be competitive in this division. I mean, it really is. The Chiefs, they feel great and they're playing really well, but after those two close losses, their margin for error has really diminished given how well the rest of the division, not rest of the, but how well the Chargers are playing, how the Raiders look to be at least a competitive team. The Broncos are not out of it by any means. It really is still up in the air in a lot of ways.
I know. I'd love to know what the playoff percentage swing is, off of this game for Denver. It does feel like it feels like everything's on the line, in part because we know who they're playing next, but it would be a huge win for them. And if they win it, it'd be 3 losses in a row for the Chiefs. Would you feel differently about the Chiefs if they lose this game, or do you feel like, nah, they'll be fine?
That's a good question. I would be a little concerned from the Chiefs' perspective. They're still going to be in great shape. They're still going to have, according to the playoff probability leverage, I did just look it up, they would still be about 85% to make the playoffs. So they'd still be in good shape, but suddenly their lead atop the AFC West looks diminished. For the Broncos, the numbers are far bigger. 24% in terms of their playoff probability. They are somewhere around 40% with a victory and down to about 15% with a loss. So one of the biggest games of the season for them. Second biggest probability leverage in the AFC this week, behind the Buffalo Bills. So a really big game for them.
That's good to know. Now, what I'm watching for Kansas City is the long term, the things that are going to matter in the end. How good are they defensively? You know, they just gave up 31 points to the Raiders. We knew that the Eric Berry situation early in the year would have an effect. Are they going to be, when they get to the playoffs, are they going to basically be the same team they were in the playoffs last year? Do you feel like they're way better than they were last year? See, I think a lot of these things will even out. We've seen the last couple of weeks, they lose a couple games. You know, do they really have a defense that's going to finish games with its pass rush that you really fear? Or are we just going to see this season kind of tell us exactly what we thought going into the year, that, you know, comes down to the playoffs, the teams with Tom Brady and Ben Roethlisberger are going to win those one-on-one games against Kansas City, and that's going to end the Chiefs season. And we start feeling that way when the Steelers go in and win, in Kansas City within the last 2 weeks. So if they lose at home and Trevor Siemian looks good, I think that's troubling for Kansas City.
I do too. I do think they're a little different this year just because the injury situation is different. They're healthier in terms of their pass rush, but they've lost Eric Berry, which I don't know if that's better or worse, having a healthy Justin Houston and an injured Eric Berry as opposed to a healthy Eric Berry and an injured Justin Houston. I mean, it's two great players at different positions, but I do wonder, I do think the offense is better. I do think that adding Kareem Hunt, having Travis Kelce healthy, having Tyreek Hill, as a more complete player than they did a year ago, I do think the offense is better, but big thing for me is health. I mean, we don't know that Travis Kelce is going to be healthy in the playoffs. We don't know that Justin Houston is going to be healthy when it comes to the postseason. We don't even know that Alex Smith is going to be healthy when it comes to the postseason. There's so much football between now and then that, as currently constructed, I do think they're a better team in the playoffs than we would have seen otherwise, but I just don't know if they're going to get there, especially given how many injuries they already have at 100%.
I do buy the thinking that Alex Smith's playing better in part because they drafted Mahomes early and started the clock ticking. I do think he's playing better.
Really?
I think that has an effect. I think that has a positive effect. Not necessarily with everybody every time, but I think that got his attention. And when I was, I saw Kansas City a couple times in the preseason and, talked to people there that I know, and they were like, I'm telling you, man, Alex is on point. And, you hear that stuff all the time. You hear stuff all the time before the season, okay, what does it mean? He could still throw four picks in the opener. But it was like they felt like he was really, really on point. And I think that can focus a guy, and Alex has been in that situation before. And when Colin Kaepernick was breathing down his neck, in San Francisco, I think he had a couple probably really good games, played some good ball, and then he ended up getting hurt. But I think he is better, and you look at some of the down-the-field metrics with him completing passes that are deeper down the field, those numbers are up. He's completed as many of those this year as he would in a typical whole season. So that is one thing that I think that's just one thing to watch. He may be a little better than he's been.
Yeah, I do think that he's playing better, so we'll see what happens. It's going to be a very interesting postseason for them if they do get there. Of course, they're in great shape to get there, but who knows if they're going to be the one seed and have a bye, if they're going to have to, possibly if they don't win the division, even travel to to the South champion, to the Jaguars. I mean, Chiefs-Jags could be an interesting first-round matchup if we get to that point, but still a lot of football to go. Mike Sando, of course, thanks so much for coming on the show today. And where can people check out more of what you're working on?
Yeah, definitely on ESPN.com. You can put my name in the search box. You'll get most of the stuff that's come up. Sando ESPN on Twitter. I'll usually tweet out the links, and on Facebook, too. I'll put all of them out there.
Cool. Mike, thank you so much for coming on the show. Always appreciate it.
Thank you, Bill.
All right, guys. Thanks so much for checking out today's episode of the Bill Barnwell Show. We're coming back next week, two more shows. And, of course, I'll be appearing on the Wednesday episode of the Nickel Package, as I do every week, talking a little bit more specifically about some teams there. A couple of guests lined up for that. But, of course, thanks so much for listening, and more podcasts coming next week.